WTLC AM Indianapolis. Indy's choice for inspiration and praise. AM 1310, The Light.
And welcome back to the second half of After News with Amos. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here on our program. Tomorrow are the at-large candidates for IPS. Thursday, Senator Mike Delf in our 2 p.m. hour. Yes, that Senator Mike Delf. And then Friday, the folks from City Mosaic, a new interfaith group, will be here with us. IPS is the subject today and tomorrow. It is the largest individual school district in Indiana. The enrollment currently is flat at 30,800, just 11 less than the previous school year. IPS serves, however, just 20% of the 153,000 public school students here in this city and county. And in case you don't know, IPS is a minority-majority district. 52.2% of the students in IPS are African American, second highest percentage of blacks of any Marion County school district. Hispanics are 21.9% of the district, highest Hispanic percentage of any district in Indianapolis. Whites are 20.4% of IPS students. 82% of IPS students are eligible for free and reduced lunch, highest percentage of any district in the city. Slightly over two-thirds, 68.4% of IPS students graduated on time from high school, and a little more than half of IPS students, 51.6%, passed both math and English language arts I-STEP. We now have the candidates for District 5 in IPS, Michael Brown and Lanier Eccles. District 5 is the western part of the IPS district. It includes some of downtown, the Old North Side, Fall Creek Place, Unwa, Riverside, Crown Hill Neighborhood, Eagledale Neighborhood, and West Side Neighborhoods north of the Speedway, out 30th Street, 34th Street, and 38th Street, out to 465. And we welcome the incumbent, Michael Brown, the challenger, Lanier Eccles. Guys, welcome. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Let me start with Lanier Eccles. Why are you running?
Hi. First, I want to say thank you for allowing us to, or allowing both of us, me specifically, for being here today. I'm running because I am an educator. I am not a career politician. I'm doing this because of the experience that I've had within IPS. I've had wonderful experiences within IPS, but I've also had a interesting viewpoint. I worked at John Marshall my first year, and I started in July, mm-hmm. and I had no books until October. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm running for IPS school board. I also had the experience of working at Harshman, where I was able to be, and this is something on the other side of the spectrum, I was able to have a principal who had the autonomy to do what he needed to do for his school. Mm-hmm. And so with that experience, knowing what IPS can be, that's why I'm running for IPS school board.
Michael Brown, why are you running again for the IPS school board?
Well, basically because the work isn't done. We've been working hard for 16 years trying to improve educational outcomes for our students. And Ms. Eccles alluded to the fact that she's not a career politician. Well, neither am I. I'm a parent. I'm a grandparent. I'm an uncle. I have a lot of grandchildren that are still in the district, even though my youngest son is now a sophomore in college. I'm looking for an opportunity to make sure that we can wrap our arms around all of our students, not just the high-performing ones that you hear about all the time, but about the students that are struggling, and we want to turn the educational outcomes around for them.
239-1310, 239-1310, this afternoon's with Amos. Let me start with the phones, and I may have a couple questions of my own. Let me start with Former Teacher of the Year. There's an original title. Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine.
My heart is really heavy as I hear from some of my former colleagues that some of the classrooms are not manned with permanent teachers. Kindergarten classes having several substitutes. First grade classes having several substitutes. The foundation is there in the foundation that the kids get are in those grades. And if they have no stability, you know, we are pretty at a standstill as to how far they can advance. So my question is, how many classes are now manned by substitute teachers?
That's a great question. Let me start with Michael Brown. Do you know how many classes are with substitutes, and why would we have so many substitutes at this point in the school year? We're 1/6 of the way through the year.
I do not know how many actually have substitute teachers this far into the year. What I do know is that we're making a concerted effort to try and attract and retain qualified teachers that can come into our classroom. See, our students are a different clientele, and you have to understand the culture of the IPS district in order to be able to be a successful teacher. But as you see, we're trying to getting into teacher compensation and trying to find ways to compensate our teachers to the equivalent of the townships that are around us and other schools, systems and districts, as we feel that that will allow us to be able to attract and retain qualified teachers.
All right, Lanier Eccles.
I really think that we need to, one, they haven't gotten a raise in 5 years. That's an issue. The teachers are not happy. And for us to be a competitive district, we need to compensate them for their efforts. Being an educator is not easy. It's more than just the August through June that people think it is, the 7 o'clock to 2:30. No, not at all. So we need to compensate our educators to fill that void. Also working with organizations that fill those voids so that they're not substitutes, working with the transition to teaching organizations to make sure that we have people that are in those classrooms.
Let me ask, people are sort of familiar with Michael Brown because he's been on the school board for a number of years. You have not, you're a relative newcomer in terms of a name that people aren't familiar with. What background and experience would you bring to the board if you're elected?
Again, my experience inside of the classroom being that I have been in a school. I have worked with the children. I still work with the children on every day, working with and partnering with different organizations is something that I know I would like to bring. Mm-hmm. I know that there are many organizations that would love to participate and support IPS. I was fortunate enough to sit inside of School 44 a few weeks ago, and to know that they have a, it's like a cause council. It's a Community Assets United for School Excellence. Fred McDowell runs this organization. And being able to bring that type of love, there was over 30 organizations brought together to support that school. Right. And so that is something that I feel that we need to move to, that we need to pivot to.
Now, I understand you're a graduate of the Seminoles, Florida State University.
Yes.
And you served in your senior year as the treasurer.
I did.
Of the student body.
I did.
And like $1 million budget.
Yes, sir.
So now, as I did the research, and I don't like to mention ladies' ages, because that's not what you're, that was,
you
I'm old school.
You never asked the ladies' age.
However, if I did my math correctly, and if you are a proud 2008 graduate of Florida State, you are elected on November the 4th, you would be the youngest school board member elected. At least in my memory, maybe you would be younger than Richard Lugar when he was elected to the school board in 1965. And this raises the question.
Yeah, we're not dumb.
This raises the question that how someone this young, not really known in the community, is endorsed by the Chamber of Commerce and Stand for Children out of all 300,000 people that live in the IPS district. Why you?
Again, I believe it's my experience inside of the classroom. It's my experience with Marion University, sitting on the alumni board, my experience sitting on the Near North Development Corporation, my work. I actually volunteered with Stand for Children. So it's not like it's this, oh, I picked you out of a hat. I had experience. I had worked with them on an occasion or two. The organization itself, Stand for Children, the ability to organize parents so that they know how to advocate is something commendable, and I appreciate that endorsement greatly.
Are you concerned, and we asked Kelly Bentley about this in the previous hour, are you concerned that Stand for Children is sending out ads and literature on your behalf that you know nothing about, that you've had no input in creating, that because they clearly say not authorized, not approved by you? Are you concerned with them representing your brand, portraying you, and you're not the one in charge of that portrayal? And that could cause people in the community to think that you're not your own person, that you're this creation of some third party.
Oh, I do not agree with that. I, again, that's the tricky thing about independent expenditures. I have no control over that. But I am my own. I am
but
my
you
own
could
person.
Tell, you could tell them, no, I don't want you to do anything on my behalf. You want to help me donate to my campaign.
Again, that's what independent expenditures for, and that's what they're handling. I know on my behalf, in terms of my persona, who I am, the community knows. I have been knocking on doors since June. I have knocked on over 2,000 doors. People are getting to know. Heck, I even knocked on Mike Brown's mother's door. Mm-hmm. I have been in the community, attending community meetings. So if there is a confusion, I pray there's not. But again, that's independent expenditures. I have nothing to do with it. But I'm doing what I can, knocking on doors, phone banking, and doing what I need to do.
And you couldn't tell them, no, don't do anything in my behalf, which is your right as the candidate.
It is, but at this point, I want to win. And if they are willing to support, if they're like-minded and willing to support me, I appreciate that. And I pray that they don't misrepresent who I am. Again, there's no coordination. I can't assist them in any way.
Let me go to Olivia at 239-1310. Hi there. Hello?
I had a question about the new proposal from Greg Ballard. I believe it was just passed, the public safety plan that's supposed to help preschools and early education. And I'm just wondering what the candidates thought. Like, will it actually help IPS, like, early education, or, you know, was pretty much what their feelings and thoughts on it was?
Will, Michael Brown, the early education help IPS?
Absolutely. Early education is going to help because the sooner that you can get a student in front of a teacher, the more chance they have of being successful. Back when the state was trying to debate full-day kindergarten, we at IPS decided we were going to do full-day kindergarten, and we instituted a plan. It was the same thing with early education. Last year, we decided we were going to do universal preschool. However, we had to scale back our plans a little bit as we were in transition from one superintendent to an interim superintendent to a permanent superintendent. However, early education is something we're going to do with or without the mayor or the state because we feel that it is essential in our community that we reach our children as early as we can.
Lanier Eccles.
I completely agree in terms of being able to make sure that our children get inside of a classroom sooner rather than later. What's interesting is that our children are expected to read by third grade, but in the state of Indiana, we don't require them to go to school until, what, they're seven?
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a disconnect. And so I greatly appreciate the money that was hopefully, and again, it's hopefully allotted for that, and appreciate them making that move. Hopefully we are able to fund it because it needs to occur.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. It's back to the phones. And Eli, hi there.
Thank you for taking my question. For both candidates, I just want to ask, where do you see the church as far as a partnership with your campaign in advancing for our students in IPS, the partnership with the local church? And also, second part of that is, what have you done to involve the church in that community that would be a part of your candidacy? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank Michael
you.
Brown?
Actually, you know, that is very important because, you know, everyone is talking about the connection between business and education. However, the church and faith-based groups and education has always been a connection. It's something that we want. However, we must deal with the fact that we want to partner with anyone that is willing to help our students to be successful. The churches, I visit churches all the time, and we talk about education, and we talk about what they can do in order to improve educational outcomes by volunteering, by tutoring, by opening up the doors to their gym, by staffing them with volunteers. See, because I see the school and the church as being hubs of the community, and it is essential that that people know that there is a safe place to come. That should be the school. That should be the church. We have several churches that rent out our auditoriums as well as our gymnasiums to hold services. And while we are not endorsing a particular religion, we are looking for volunteers to be able to help our students to be successful and productive citizens.
Lanier Eccles.
I am all for community partnerships. Raised in the church, I completely believe that it takes a community. It takes a village to raise a child. And with that, I believe the church has an involved or an important piece in that. My involvement, I have been attending church services and speaking to people, First Baptist North, as well as Barnes. I was at Barnes on Sunday. And I believe that the partnerships with faith-based organizations are essential in moving the needle for our children. And not just faith-based organizations. I think working with any organization that is willing to support our children where they need to go, whether that's colleges and universities, Boys and Girls Club, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, whoever and whatever, whether they're black, white, Puerto Rican, Haitian, whatever your faith, creed, if you're willing to support our children, I want you.
Let me go to Bill at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Your candidates. Amos, I have two questions.
Okay.
First question, I've heard anecdotal comments that the federal government is looking, Department of Education is looking at IPS relative to disproportionate suspensions and expulsions of African-American students. I don't know whether that's true or not. I'm asking the question. And I would like the candidates to respond to that, because if the students are not being educated, time on task is important. So what is their feeling about disproportionate suspensions and expulsions? My second question deals with the funding of IPS. Over the last year, we've heard IPS had a great deficit. Then the new superintendent found that we have a surplus. One of the questions you asked, and the candidates responded, one of the candidates responded about the teacher salaries. The state of Indiana controls the operational funding, the funding for education for all school systems in the state of Indiana. And in addition, the over the summer, we've had this great debate about pre-K,
right,
and whose responsibility that was. Now, it was the funding mechanism that was proposed and was debated ad nauseum in this community was have lost over $3 million to the 11 school corporations in Marion County to fund pre-K. The Transportation and Capital Projects Fund for IPS would have been hit at $753,000. The superintendent publicly stated that that could be absorbed. What is the status, my second question is, what is the status of IPS's financing? Can we absorb, and we can't pay teachers more than the state gives us the money to pay them. We can't go to the tax base in the era of tax caps and circuit breakers and all that nonsense that's going on.
Right.
So I would like to know about the financial wherewithal of IPS to pay additional teachers and whether or not African-American students are subject to disproportionate suspensions.
Let me go to Lanier Eccles first, because I think the budget was brought up under your watch. How then do you fund increased dollars for teachers when the state of Indiana is probably going to keep their funding relatively flat?
That's going to take us being very creative with how we are funding things. Creative meaning we need to see how we can reallocate money. I don't think it's a funding problem. I think it's a misallocation problem. There are, at one point, only 40 cents on the dollar was actually making it to the classroom. That's unfortunate, because the classroom is the most important asset in this whole.
But if over 85%, I believe, of the dollars go to personnel,
mm-hmm,
and you're saying that 40% of the dollars are not going in the classroom, then that is personnel that's not in the classrooms. Or are we talking about school bus drivers? Are we talking about cafeteria workers? Are we talking about janitors? Those are, that's
central
payroll.
Central office is what I was speaking to specifically. Again, it is a very difficult task, and I you hate to say it, but we are in the educating children business. And so with that, we need to make sure that the children are educated. And so we need to, again, reallocate, reorganize. Our central office would be a great place to start.
On disproportionality of suspensions and expulsions, how do you un-disproportionality that?
That, so again, I live with this every day, being a dean of students. You do.
You're
with
a dean
this,
of students where?
At Carpe Diem.
That's a charter school.
Yes, it okay. is. It's located at 22nd and Meridian.
Okay.
But again, it is really interesting. It's an interesting balancing act that you have. So you don't want to suspend kids for acting crazy, but you also want to set the precedent that that's not acceptable at school. And so you have a balancing act that you have. And so one of the big things that I have at my school is the whole idea of relationships. Rules without relationships breeds rebellion. And so I have children that have relationships with different teachers that they know that who they can go to if they're having a moment, and having and learning how to have conversations. So, again, including the relationships and positive behavior supports is key to reduce those suspensions, because if they're not in class, they're not learning.
Have you had suspensions and expulsions this school year?
Yes, we have suspensions, no expulsions.
What percentage of those suspended are African American?
We are, let's see, I can't give you that number offhand. I'm sorry.
Is it more than half?
Being that we are more than half African American, it would be a difficult number. Does that make sense? If you have 90% African American children in your school, and you have half of them that have been suspended, so
are 90% of the students who've been suspended this year African American? Because that would be proportional. Any percentage less than that is less than proportional.
Okay. So I'm going to say, I'll just go ahead and say, I don't know. How about that? I
okay.
don't know.
Michael Brown, on the two questions. First of all, on the funding, where do you get on this? Since everyone agrees, including the teachers, that they haven't, you know, had the dollars, where do you find them from? Because you're stuck with the state funding. You can't take it out of the transportation fund. You can't take it out of the building fund. You can't take it out of whatever money you're going to get from Angie's List for selling the Mallory building.
That is correct. Actually, 92% of our budget is salary and benefits, and I don't think a lot of people understand that. So it's only 8% outside of that that is not about people. And what we have to understand is we have to reallocate our resources towards the classroom. Now, what does that mean? Because a lot of people, when they think of the classroom, they think of the teacher. Okay, but what's the first thing you see when you walk into a school building? The cleanliness of it. We have custodians. We have bus drivers, who is the first person that meets the child in the morning. Everyone needs to make a competitive wage, and we have to find a way in order to reallocate some of our salaries, and there is a lot. We need to mainstream our central office. And we need to also look, if we bring more autonomy to the schools, then there won't be the need for as many decision makers down at central office that we have had.
But can't, Lanier Echols and others have made it, whether it's the last governor, this governor, or what have you, the Mind Trust, Stanford Children, that you can back up a U-Haul truck to the Ed Center, take out 150 to 250 people, and save a gazillion dollars and put it back in the classroom. Is that real?
No, actually it isn't.
Why is that not real?
Because we actually do need administrators. I mean, we have to have people.
There's some listeners there that would just love some of them administrators to just go to Kansas.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, obviously, there is a need for administration. To what extent? We have to find people that are able to multitask. We have to find people that are able to do more than one job. And we have to try and pay a competitive wage. And if I can bring you in and pay you a little more than the person that was making before you, but you're doing two jobs, then that's the route we have to go. As far as suspensions and expulsions, the more time that a student is in front of a teacher, the better chance they have of being academically successful, because attendance is the greatest indicator of academic success.
Would you be concerned if you're reelected if the feds bring a hammer down on IPS because of disproportionality for suspensions and expulsions?
Well, I would be. What we have to do is we've got to find a way to be able to understand that every time I raise my voice does not mean I'm upset. And we have to have cultural competency. And that's one of the things that we really have to work on as a school district. We've got to change the culture of not only our students and parents, but of our administrators, our teachers. We have to find ways to make it work.
239-1310. 239-1310 this afternoon's name is when we come back. Yes, I want to ask the John Marshall question. Yes, I'm going to ask the, how can we be a district that's 22% Hispanic and there are no Hispanic administrators? What are these candidates, Michael Brown and Lanier Echols, going to do about those two? It's After News with Amos after these.
Hi, this is Jessica Williams Gibson, newsroom manager at the Indianapolis Recorder newspaper, and you're listening to After News with Amos on AM 1310, The Life.
IPS District 5 is a minority-majority district, about half African-American, 18-19% Hispanic. Hispanics are 22% of the students in IPS, and I was stunned to find out that there is no Hispanic administrators anywhere in IPS. Lanier Eccles, if you're elected, what can you and the board do as the superintendent searches for the best administrators out there to, you know, get some representation in administration from the Latino community, which is the community that is keeping IPS growing as a district?
I think that goes with reaching out to the organization just left me, but reaching out to those Hispanic organizations that are wanting to. But I also think it's all about being competitive. I made this comment, and it's a little funny, but a lot of the people in my generation aren't going into education because it's not competitively financial.
Mm-hmm.
My friends are doctors and lawyers and architects because they go to school so that they can do better, quote unquote, than what their parents did, so they can support their parents. And so mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting that we aren't necessarily as competitive as a district for the stresses, quote unquote, that the principals are going to. So I know that in other districts I can go up north and make more and have less stress. And so being competitive, I think, is the key to drawing people to this.
Michael Brown.
I think what we have to do is be more aggressive in our recruitment of individuals. I had a conversation earlier about African Americans as well as Latinos, and what we need to do is make sure that people understand that they are welcome in our district. And I think it is important that students see someone that looks like them. Not that that's going to be an indicator that they're going to be any more successful, but it looks good to see someone that looks like them wearing a shirt and a tie that comes to work every day and is a respected person, a respected member of the community.
IPS had a policy under the previous superintendent that if a individual was arrested on an IPS property with a deadly weapon, that information, or at least the basic information, hey, somebody had a deadly weapon, they were arrested at our school, was released to the public. 2 weeks ago, there was an incident at John Marshall where a student was caught with a loaded weapon on campus, plus a knife and a machete and some vodka and dice. Not only did IPS not announce that to the public, the principal of that school did not even announce that to the parents at that school. If you all are elected or reelected to the board, should this now be a board policy where if somebody is caught with a deadly weapon at an IPS school, the public needs to be notified, Michael Brown?
I absolutely believe that. I do believe in student confidentiality. However, you do not have to release the name of the student, but I would want to know as a parent, as a grandparent, as an uncle, I would like to know whether or not my child's school is being upfront. I believe in being open and honest. I believe in transparency. A lot of people say they believe in transparency, but it's conditional.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in transparency. We're going to lay all the cards up on the table. This is what you've got. The thing with IPS is that we are ready and willing to accept everyone at any time, because we want to educate students. We want to educate children, but I also want the children to be safe. So it is very important that people know what they're getting themselves into.
Lanier Eccles.
I think it could have been handled differently. At the least, it should have been reported to the district, so the district's PR could at least handle that rather than the principal needing or feeling like she needed to do something. But I definitely feel that it could have been handled differently and should have been, at least been reported to the district so that they could have handled it.
Back to the phones. And William, hi there. Thanks for waiting, William.
How you doing, Mr. Brown?
I'm fine. They're fine. What's up?
I was just thinking that we're thinking about the hierarchy of the school system, but a lot of the responsibility for the focus and inspiration and motivation don't begin in the classroom. It begins at home. And I was just thinking, what will the candidates do in order to get the parents and the people in the neighborhood to start to get the children in the right frame of mind to excel in school.
All right, Lanier Eccles, if you're elected, you would be the youngest IPS board member at least since the early 1960s. How, if you're elected, do you improve parent engagement and community involvement?
Parent engagement is essential to having students be successful. As an educator, it's interesting. The parents that I know that I can call and be there at the drop of a dime, their students typically do the best, typically. With that, getting students and parents aligned, it's really interesting. I work in a middle school and high school, and you see that transition from going from parents who are highly involved in elementary, and then there's a disconnect for some reason in high school and middle school. And so somehow continuing that trajectory, welcoming them, for some reason parents feel, since they don't have that one central parent or, excuse me, teacher to go to, that they don't know how to or who to go to support their child. And in some instances, they don't know how to advocate for their child. And so beginning that process with community organizations as well as, I'm going to say it, organizations like Stand for Children, so that they understand how to advocate for their child in good and bad circumstances.
Michael Brown?
Well, let me speak to the main point. We have to engage our homes and our churches in character education. It is very important that students understand that there are things that you can and cannot do in public settings. And we have to make sure that our churches understand and are teaching, not just preaching at, but teaching, what it takes to be a responsible citizen. The same thing in our homes. We know how to get parents into buildings. We have a chili supper, spaghetti supper, a play, a basketball game. Everyone wants to come and see their student perform, a musical interlude. So we need to get parents in the building. Once we do, we need to let them know that I care about your child as much as you do. But see, we have to first understand reaching out to young people is, if young people trust you, they will do whatever you ask. And it's very important. That's why I volunteer in schools on a daily basis. I could go into Northwest High School right now and no, less than 40 kids walk up and give me a hug because I'm there. Right. And I'm not there in the authority role. I'm there as Papaw, as Uncle Mike, as, you know, just that guy that lives down the street that they know and they know they can call on.
Back to the phones in Cordelia, 239-1310. Hi there.
Thank you, Amos. My question is for Lanier, and I sit on the Near North Board of Corporation as well with her. I was most disappointed that she was unable to attend the forum on September the 27th at Marion, at Martin University for IPS candidates. However, I am, my question is, as a charter school administrator, why do you feel that you can make policy for IPS? You know, I've always been taught that you can't serve two masters, so if you will explain that to me, I would definitely appreciate it.
First, right. I want to say hi, Cordelia. I hope all is well with you.
It is.
And I want to apologize. I was not able to make the September 27th forum. I actually had a prior engagement that left me out of state, and I could not financially make that move. So, again, I apologize for not being there. But in terms of me working at a charter school, I want to say my roots are in IPS. That's where I began. That's why I moved to this city, was because of IPS. And just because that, it's interesting. People are like, oh, you must be pro-charter because you work at a charter school. No, that's just where I work. That's where I was able to see how things are done differently. I fortunately have the experience on both sides of a token that everyone seems to be arguing over, traditional public versus traditional, public charter. And so I feel that I have the experience to do so. It's not serving two masters. I care about children no matter what school they attend. I feel that every child inside of Indianapolis, should have access to a quality education. And I work at a charter school, but that's because that's where I needed a job. And so that's where I worked. So it's not a matter of serving two masters. It's about making sure that every child in Indianapolis has access to a quality education regardless.
Lanier Eccles, since you were not at that forum on September the 27th, and every other candidate that was there has now been on the record on this question, I will ask you that now, because I'm sure Chalkbeat Indiana is listening for this answer. In your campaign finance, how much has your campaign raised?
As of... Do you want as of the 11th or as of yesterday? Because, you know, I've been making dialing for dollars and calling people.
First, as of the filing that will be made public on the 17th, but the deadline was on the 11th.
I believe it's 23,000.
Okay, and you're still out there.
I am calling people, cousins, neighbors. Do you have a dollar I can borrow?
They won't let me contribute anything. All right, so now we have that answer. We appreciate that. 239-1310. Let me go back to the phones. And Karen, hi there.
Hi, Amos. I hope you can hear me because I'm walking back from lunch.
But all right, we can
first thing, I want to make sure I'm calling at the correct time and that you advised me several months ago. Are these the people that set up the curriculum?
They don't set up the curriculum. They oversee the superintendent who does the curriculum, but they are the ultimate authority of the district. What's your question?
My question has been the same question for 29 years. One way of building character for our community, and I'm not knocking, I'm concerned about all children. But my question is, in 2014, why we still do not have an actual Black history class? I call periodically. I know people are tired of me calling about that, but that's important. When you talk about building character, build our children's character by letting them know what their ancestors have donated. That's something we don't learn in school. And before anybody says it starts at home, I didn't know about all the things that Black people did since I was in my 30s.
Right.
So sometimes we don't know. So let be a part of the curriculum?
I think it is incorporated in the curriculum, but in terms of a separate class, that's usually what happens at the college level. Let me let Lanier Eccles and then Michael Brown respond. Lanier Eccles.
Hi. I'm sorry. I missed your name, but I want to say thank
you. It is Karen.
Karen, thank you for calling and asking that question. I asked the same thing when I started teaching. I have a background. I have social science education background, and then I was trained to be a reading teacher. And so my creative self felt the need to make sure that my children knew their background. And so I taught reading, and we did poetry. And so I made sure that they had the background of the Harlem Renaissance, something to be proud of. Our African-American, Langston Hughes, what he did and what he stood for, and all of the contributors to the Renaissance. And so that is something I am definitely passionate about. I said, you can't go forward until you know what you've been. And so, I am so supportive, of that curriculum. Things such as 100 Black Men, again, my sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, we all believe in teaching about the history so that we know where we're going, in terms of making it a curriculum. I'm not sure if that's able to, but I know that some teachers have the freedom to do it inside of their classroom.
Michael Brown.
A lot of what goes on is driven by the state requirements for graduation and by us having so many hours in a day. We do, for many years, Dr. Pat Payne was our director of multicultural education, and that was her mission, to make sure that little brown children knew about what their brown ancestors did. And I think she was very successful with it. As far as it being a particular class, if petitioned, I am sure that we would add that option to the curriculum. But once again, then students would also have to select it.
239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's name is We'll Take a Break. We'll be back with our many moments with the candidates from District 5, Lanier Eccles and Michael Brown. Tomorrow, the at-large candidates will be here. That's for the entire IPS district. And then Thursday, Senator Mike Delf, that's a Republican, he'll be here in our 2 o'clock hour. Also on Friday at 2 o'clock, the folks with City Mosaic, that is a new inter-church organization. And then Monday, this is what it says in my book, Monday, the former superintendent of IPS, now the president of Martin University, Dr. Eugene White, will be here. He'll be talking about Martin University, not about IPS. It's afternoons with Amos after these.
Hello, this is Maggie Lewis, president of the City County Council. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
Back to the phones in Marianne. Hi there.
There, how are you?
Fine.
I have a question that probably relates most directly to Lanier, although Michael may have comments as well. And that is, Lanier, as a charter school employee, I know you're in a little bit of a unique situation in this race. As I'm sure all of you know, if you happen to be an IPS employee, you could not run for the board.
Exactly.
But because you're a charter school employee, you are legally allowed to. And I presume the reason that the law doesn't allow IPS employees is because they would then be voting on their own compensation, which
exactly.
could be a conflict of interest.
Exactly.
We're unique in Indianapolis that there will likely be proposals come before this board in the next 4 years relating to what degree charter schools are pulled into IPS, and I would presume that it might even be possible that you might be voting on the charter school that is your employee now, or your employer now. So I have two questions. One of them is, if there were votes that related to how charter schools would be brought into the IPS system, or IPS brought into the charter school system, will you then, I presume, be recusing yourself from those votes? Number two, it's also interesting because under the campaign finance laws, charter school employees are specifically defined as government employees and then subject to the kind of laws that we usually think of as kind of applying to, like, state House employees and other people in campaigning, you know, relating to their government work. On your Facebook campaign page, you have posted there that you decided to take along your mentee from school one day on canvassing, who I presume is a student at the school. I question whether that's appropriate for the Dean of Students, and would you care to comment on that?
Okay, I guess there's 3 points. I'll answer the first one first. My mentee is my mentee through my sorority. We were matched because of our personalities. Again, I gave her the application. She filled it out. And through my sorority, she is my mentee. By no means did I take her from school, and it was actually on a Saturday.
So she is not a student at the school, then. I totally misunderstood.
No. She is. No, she is. I'll be completely honest. She is a student.
And you're the dean of students?
Yes. And I am the dean of students. But as an African-American woman, I wanted her to see the political process regardless of where I worked. And so she's been to many events, political and non-political, not involving me. And so that it's an interesting relationship. But, again, she was not taken from school. It was, I've talked to her mother. Is it okay if she goes? Sure, let's go. And that's why I think mentoring is key. And so it's the doggone logistics. But, yes, she is my mentee, a wonderful woman. She was a beautiful young lady. In terms of the
recruiting. And I presume she will be the only student at the school who will be campaigning with you then.
Yeah, she was the only one that has ever. But that's also because we have a relationship outside.
I'm running short of time. Let me let, in fairness to Lanier, quickly address the other issues. One on recusal. If you're elected, would you recuse yourself if your charter company came up to be involved in an IPS or the authorizer of your charter school, which is the State of Indiana Charter School Board? Because that's, we're now opening up several cans of worms here.
Yes.
Okay. And I think that, I think I got those parts of the questions. Let me go to Scotty right quick. Scotty, you have 1 minute.
Okay, yes. My name is Scotty. I'm a JRTC instructor at IPS. And my question is this. Statistics show that our graduation rate for the students that, RTC is much higher than the general population. So my question is this. Why don't we have more JRTC programs, and why are JRTC instructors paid less than any instructors in the state?
Michael Brown, is he correct that the students in JROTC have a higher graduation rate than IPS students as a whole? And why would they get less money? I thought, doesn't the federal government augment the salaries of the people that are teaching ROTC?
Yes, on both. One, not only JROTC, but also our athletes graduate at a higher rate than students that are not. And a lot of that is based upon our athletic eligibility policy, which forces students to attend 90% of all classes, have a C or better grade point average, no two grades below a C.
Mm-hmm.
ROTC is very integral because it does teach the discipline that a lot of our students need, and it gives them opportunities through the United States Army, or United States military, period.
Are the instructors of ROTC separate from teachers, or are they like coaches where they do a regular class and they do ROTC as well?
Well, many of them, no, they are. They do teach the ROTC class. They teach the curriculum that is written by the United States government. They also, many of them do have teacher's license, but that is correct. They are paid less. And half of their salary is augmented through the Department of Army, and we match the other half.
All right, I appreciate it. Teresa will be the last caller with Lanier Eccles and Michael Brown. Hi there. You got about 1 minute.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine.
Good. I just had a statement. I just want to say I believe that the school system has failed my child. For the past 2 or 3 years, he attends the IPS school. For the past 2 to 3 years, he has been out of school more than he has been in the school. And I understand that he is not the best student at the school. However, he's never going to get that chance to prove himself if he's not in school. And the lines of communication at the school that he attends, I mean, are really horrible. He can get suspended on a Monday, and I won't receive the suspension notice until Friday. Now, I work. I'm a single parent, and I work. And just the lines of communication, I believe if the lines of communication were a little bit better, you know, then maybe we could probably get somewhere with this. And someone made a comment about the wraparound services. That is, everyone does not qualify for that service. So what do we do about our kids that are struggling and need help?
Lanier Eccles, quickly.
I think it's interesting that the wraparound services only come when the student has become terrible, and that's unfortunate. I think what needs to occur is that we need to create our own somewhat wraparound services with mentorships and whatnot. I know that communication is key, and kids play parent against school,
yes.
And they'll tell you one thing and the school might have said something else, and so I understand the importance of communication, and
right.
I know that
they're vice versa. Yes, I could go both ways, the student, the teachers can also.
And you're also saying that the district is not following their procedures as written in their policy. Michael Brown, quickly, your response to the caller.
Yeah, that's very good. You know, I was the only person that voted against letting go of the classified deans and the hall monitors. Those people were support staff that were essential to the performance of our high school students, especially because they could head off things. They had their finger on the pulse of the district. It's very important that we wrap our arms around all of our students. Wraparound services need to be. It doesn't have to be a special ed student. It could be a regular ed right. student, could be an advanced student. Students need to know that there's someone that they can count on.
Our standard closing question with every candidate is, if people want more information about your campaign, Lanier Eccles, how do they get a hold of you?
They can definitely email me at ecclesforeducation@gmail.com or visit my website at ecclesforeducation.com.
Michael Brown.
Dr. Michael Brown for IPSschoolBoard.com.
Tomorrow, first of all, Lanier Eccles, Michael Brown, thanks very, very much. Tomorrow, the at-large candidates, Ramon Batts, Pastor David Hampton, Annie Roof, Marianne Sullivan, maybe even Josh Owens live in studio. Oh, it's exciting. This is a great conversation. It'll be even better tomorrow. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow, live at 1.